For almost 2,000 years, the Catholic Church has pointed the way toward salvation through Jesus Christ. For each of us, that journey starts in darkness, as if in a cave. We invite you now to come with us as we seek wisdom and truth by way of faith and reason with your guides, Mark Tuttle and Timothy O'Donnell. Join us in the Catholic Cave. Welcome once again to the Catholic Cave. I'm Kent Blanford. In the cave with me, Mr. Mark Tuttle, in an empty chair where Tim O'Donnell normally sits. Tim is obviously out doing what cavemen do, chasing mastodon to make a living.
Yep, Tim is unfortunately not able to be here, but we are going to try to fill his shoes, which, you know, they happen to be rather large shoes because Tim's kind of a large guy.
I think both of us could fit those.
So what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back from the break, we're going to have a special guest on to talk about a particular problem that I think is, you know, if you looked at the spiritual crisis in America or in the West, spiritual indifference, just the sort of meh spirituality that Bishop Robert Barron has talked about, that's probably one of the biggest plagues we face.
You know, when we take a look at spirituality today, quite frankly, most of the time we think of, you know, Christianity and religion versus atheism. Well, there's that big gap in the middle of indifference.
Right. And when you think about it, it makes sense because, you know, the opposite of love is not hatred, as has been pointed out. It's indifference, you know. It's just that sort of cold shoulder, you know. And when marriages go bad, when relationships go bad, that's the symptom. It's not outright hostility a lot of times. It's just that cold indifference. And unfortunately, that's the attitude that a lot of people these days have towards God and the church and spirituality.
Well, we're going to take a look at just exactly how you address that with Matt Nelson from Catholic Answers right after this break. You're listening to The Catholic Cave on Catholic Radio Indy.
Most of us like to keep up on what's going on in the world and try to catch a little news each day. Did you know that you can catch the very latest Catholic news right on our website? We have news from Rome, from around the world, and here at home, updated every day so you always know what's going on from a Catholic perspective. Check it out. Go to CatholicRadioIndy.org and look for the Catholic news headlines. There's always something new at CatholicRadioIndy.org.
Ever since we've been on the air at Catholic Radio, we've always wanted to have billboards, but they just don't fit in our budget. And since you'll probably never see a real billboard for us, I'm going to ask you to do something, to imagine one. In your mind, picture a large, empty billboard. Yeah, that's it. Now pick a background color, any color at all. Okay, then across the top of your billboard, put just two words, Catholic Radio. Make them really big. Then below that, in even bigger letters, put 89.1 and 90.9 FM. Wow, that's a great billboard. Now, if this billboard were real, all of your friends and neighbors could see it, and they'd know all about Catholic Radio. But since it's only an imaginary billboard, we're going to have to depend on you to tell your friends about Catholic Radio. Remember, Catholic Radio 89.1 and 90.9 FM. Oh, and by the way, nice choice on that background color. It really looks good.
Listening to this radio was really like the jump start of me getting to know Jesus.
This is the station that led me to Christ.
Catholic Radio Indy.
Welcome back once again to the Catholic Cave. I'm Mark Tuttle here with Kent Blanford, and we have on air with us a special guest, Matt Nelson. You can usually hear Matt Nelson on Catholic Answers Live. Matt has recently written a book on spiritual indifference. Just whatever. How to help the spiritually indifferent find beliefs that really matter. Welcome to the cave, Matt.
Thanks for having me, guys. It's good to be on with you.
Yeah, it's great. Great you could join us. You're joining us all the way from Saskatchewan.
Yes, yes, I am. Yeah, it's like I was telling you off air. I'm impressed by your ability to say that word. I run into a lot of people from the States that tend to, well, from just about anywhere that's fairly far away from here that are quite intimidated by the word Saskatchewan. So you did great saying it.
I lived for a spell up in Wisconsin, and when I first moved up there, I could not pronounce any of the places nearby correctly. I tried to put the stress on the right place, and it was always wrong. There was a place called Delavan, and I wanted to call it Delavan. Nope, quick. You know, I mean, there was Oconomowoc. That was probably the hardest one, was Oconomowoc. So,
no kidding.
Yeah, you get all of those Native American names out there, and it's difficult to pronounce.
Exactly.
Yep.
Exactly.
Well, spiritual indifference. So, you know, we talk a lot about moral relativism. We talk a lot about evangelization. We talk about a lot about how to try to engage non-Catholics and other people who may even be unchurched. And then you run across somebody who's spiritually indifferent, and it's like you hit a brick wall. What is so difficult about spiritual indifference when it comes to talking to people about the faith?
Yeah, well, you know, let's just compare this for a second to talking to a seeking atheist or some skeptic who's interested in getting into arguments and having an honest conversation about what they believe. At least with an honest seeker who doesn't believe in God, they're going to look at arguments for and against the existence of God, and which is just kind of the fundamental question that you're going to ask. I mean, you're not going to dive into asking whether or not Jesus is truly present in the Eucharist with an atheist. So at least that's probably not the best starting point. So at least with an honest seeker who doesn't believe in God, you can have a dialogue that has a intentional direction, and there's a potential there to make some ground.
Yeah.
But with an indifferentist, that's not the case at all. It's sort of one of those things where it's like you're running as fast as you can, but your feet aren't even touching the ground, so you're not really getting anywhere at all.
Yeah, Bishop Robert Barron has called this sort of the meh spirituality, and I think we're all familiar with that. Of you know, we may have friends or relatives that are close to you having dinner, something comes up spiritually related. And yeah, the reaction is just, meh, you know, I'm not really into that. You know, I'm not really into the faith, which to me seems like a huge contradiction in some ways, because, you know, we hear about the God-shaped hole that people have in their hearts. And, you know, we kind of understand philosophically that people are religiously motivated. You know, we have this yearning by nature for God. So we're taught in the catechism. And then we run across the spiritually indifferent, and they almost seem like a contradiction to that. They almost seem like proof that no, mankind is not by nature drawn towards God. So, you know, are they contradictory? You know, when we run into this large, because I mean, this is a huge, huge mass of our fellow countrymen, really, honestly. You know, if you went and did a poll, I would bet probably a good 50 to 60% would fit this spiritually indifferent label. Does this sort of contradict the idea that you know, man by nature is drawn towards God? You know, is spiritual indifference proof that man really doesn't have this natural desire for God?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think we could probably put it that way. If we go back through the years of human history and we look in every age and culture, what we're going to find is that this spiritual impulse seems to come to the surface in every one of those ages and cultures. You know, religions don't always look the same, and spiritual beliefs don't always look the same. But if we distill all those beliefs, we often find many of the same features, things like sacrifice and a priesthood and belief in some kind of a supreme being, something like God or gods. But regardless of whether or not there are many similar features at all, what we see is that there was some sort of a spiritual tendency, whatever the specifics were, in every age and culture. So it's clear when we look back in history and we read historians like Christopher Dawson, who's a great Catholic historian from the 20th century, or Frank Sheed, who is a great Catholic apologist. So there were so many really good Catholic writers in the 20th century, and I find that a lot of times, you know, it was these guys, Chesterton, Lewis, all of them were pointing this out. Human beings have this natural tendency to desire the fulfillment of all their desires in the transcendent. It's sort of like our desire to eat food to sustain us. And so there's something contradictory deep down about this spiritual indifference. But at the same time, it's not necessarily a sort of conscious contradiction. It reminds me of maybe my little girls. I got two little girls. One of them's 2 and one of them's almost 4. And when it's bedtime and I tell them that they're tired and that they need to get into bed and have a sleep so that they can wake up the next day with renewed energy, they almost always deny they're tired. And I think they really believe they're not tired, but I can see that their eyelids are heavy and there's a lot of evidence that they're very tired. But, you know, they just haven't been given the tools to necessarily identify what it means to be tired. And so that's really our goal when we evangelize the spiritually indifferent, is we want to remind them that they're made not just for earth, but for heaven as well. And that can be done that might not be the exact words we use with every single spiritual indifferentist, but that's kind of what we want to get at, is you've got this deep down longing, or God-shaped hole, as Blaise Pascal and others have put it, that you got this void that you desire to fill. We're offering you the one and only thing that can fill that void, and then we can go from there.
I'm glad you brought up Pascal, because, you know, Pascal is one of these thinkers that, if people are familiar with the name, they know him through mathematics. They really do not think of him as a Christian thinker. And he's one of the first, I would say he's probably one of the first modern Christian thinkers and modern Christian apologists that are able to kind of speak to us sort of after the Enlightenment has come along and Descartes done his thing where, you know, he's meditated and kind of figured out that truth comes from, you know, within him rather than something outside of him, which, you know, Tim and I have lots of conversations about Descartes. He likes to kind of barbecue Descartes. I think I'm a little more sympathetic to Descartes' project and what he was doing, but that's another story. But Pascal was a contemporary with Descartes, and, you know, he's really one of the first apologists that speaks to modern man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. You know, Blaise Pascal was one of the great thinkers of the 17th century and of the Enlightenment. So many people consider him a living C.S. Lewis. Dr. Peter Kraft has written a book, probably one of the best books you can get out there, on the pensées of Blaise Pascal, or the thoughts of Blaise Pascal. And in there, in that book, Peter Kraft calls Pascal the perfect apologist for our times. And the irony is, he wrote his apologetic work, or really what were notes that were supposed to become a work of Christian apologetics, those pensées, he wrote those in the 17th century, so he wrote that hundreds of years ago, and yet what he was writing was very applicable to our situation today as missionaries in the church. And so Pascal is somebody who experienced a profound conversion and came to know Jesus Christ, but could also understand spiritual indifference and skepticism and understand what it's like to not have a profound belief in God. And he was able to write knowing what it's like to be on both sides of the fence. I think that Blaise Pascal is probably the most profound thinker on religious indifference that we have available to us today.
What was Pascal's insight? I mean, you know, when you break down spiritual indifference and you kind of, I like to take these things and kind of try to look at them as finding the root sin. So if you were to take spiritual indifference and you were to try to look for the root sin, you know, the two obvious culprits that come to mind would be spiritual sloth, or some form of just plain pure laziness, or intellectual skepticism. And you know, you mentioned, you know, Pascal came from a kind of a skeptical background and then had a profound conversion. What's the, you know, at least according to Pascal, what's sort of the root sin there?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, Pascal says in his pensées, he says, men despise religion and they're afraid that it's true. And I think that reveals something deeply profound about the human condition. We've desired, since the Garden of Eden, we go back to Genesis and read the first couple of chapters, the first few chapters, and it becomes apparent that from the beginning, man has desired to be self-sufficient. That is, he's desired to be like God. But not in the way the early church fathers meant when they said God became man so that man might become God. Not in the sense that we could be divinized by God or be partakers in the divine nature, as Peter writes in 2 Peter chapter 1, verse 4. But we've desired to kind of cancel out the idea of a God outside of ourselves, and we have this radicalized self-sufficiency often where we just want to run our own show. Pascal saw this. He realized that we're broken and that we are sort of afraid of God. We're afraid of having an authority like God ruling in our lives and being at the center of it. And so what I think was really profound about what Pascal revealed to us was these two tactics that we tend to use when we want to avoid the reality of God. We want to kind of clutch to and hold on to our desire to be gods ourselves. He said there's two things that we tend to do. One is we become indifferent towards spiritual things. And the other thing is we use diversion. So indifference and diversion.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to say that so characterizes the contemporary situation. I mean, it's hard not to look at American culture, and I would imagine Canadian culture too, and not see that, you know, our whole society to a certain extent is built off of this idea of diversion and indifference towards spiritual matters at this point.
Absolutely. Yeah, in a sense we could say, you know, just thinking about Pascal's reference to diversion, we're sort of running scared in today's society. You know, we're literally running. We're so busy. We're not taking the time to consider what we are as human persons and where we come from and what we might hope in and all of life's biggest questions that kind of just get swept under the table. So diversion and indifference in many ways could be seen as being related to each other. You know, if we're constantly diverting our attention away from spiritual things, we're not going to think seriously about spiritual things. And so we're going to remain ignorant and indifferent towards them. And so, you know, these things work hand in hand. But, yeah, there's no doubt that these are, I mean, for me, when I read this, I got thinking to myself about my own experience. Because I had a profound reversion to the Catholic Church about 8 years ago when I was 25 years old. And so, like Pascal, I had experienced being on both sides of the fence as well. So when I sat back and read what he was writing, I was like, this is exactly my experience. These are exactly the tactics I was using to try to avoid having to accept the reality of a sovereign God who has the authority to tell me in my life what to do. You know, and eventually I came to see that that's exactly what we want. We want an all-powerful, all-knowing, all-loving God to be in our lives to help us have the proper direction so that we can achieve ultimate happiness and become what we're meant to be. But yeah, Pascal had it bang on, and I'm saying that as somebody who myself has been an indifferentist.
We are talking with Matt Nelson today. He is the author of Just Whatever, How to Help the Spiritually Indifferent Find Beliefs That Really Matter. And we were just talking about Blaise Pascal, the 16th century philosopher or I guess he's 17th century, you know, that wrote a lot on spiritual indifference, wrote his pensées, you know, his thoughts on how to address this issue, because it was a, you know, common problem then, still a problem, common problem now. So Matt, how do you address this? It'd be great if we could all go and, you know, just plop down in a coffee shop with a copy of Pascal and ask the person next to us, well, have you read Pascal? But it doesn't quite work like that.
Yeah. That being said, I don't know if, yeah, you're right. I don't know if I'd be handing Blaise Pascal across the table, seeing as it's a classic. So reading the classics isn't always necessarily what people are accustomed to do. Although, if I was C.S. Lewis, I'd say read two classics for every modern work of literature you read these days. But it's not such a bad, that being said, it's not such a bad strategy to have good books ready to hand across the table to someone you're speaking to. But we can get more into that in a bit here, but I want to backtrack a little bit to answer your question. So how do we approach strategically evangelizing the indifferent? Well, the first thing I think we need to do is make sure we understand the problem. We want to define religious indifference so that we know what we're dealing with. And so in the book, what I do is I start with a general definition. Religious indifference is a failure to think seriously about religious questions and the failure to give God his due. So there's kind of two key components to religious indifference. One is an intellectual component, and one is a practical component. So it's kind of a general way of understanding what religious indifference is. But as I got thinking about it, I realized, you know what, indifference tends to happen to varying forms and varying degrees depending on a person's individual situation and maybe even the stage of a person's life. I mean, for myself, I think all three of these forms at different times in my life would have applied equally well. So the first form that I discuss in the book, and this is section one of the book where we go, we kind of dive deep into it and we break it down, and then I provide some apologetic strategies. Apologetic as in apologetics, where we can make a defense and an explanation of the faith. And so in that first section, the indifference that we specifically deal with is called closed religious indifference. It's called closed religious indifference because it reflects an extreme closed-mindedness towards religion. And this is the sort of indifference that we see with people who hold some sort of a skeptical view about God and religion. So atheists, agnostics, deists, or people who believe God is impersonal. Maybe God is someone who created the world and then turned his back on the world and has never had anything to do with it since he's created it. All of these sort of underlying philosophies lead to the attitude that all religions are equally pointless and not worth our time. And that can lead to indifference. And so that's the first form of indifference that I deal with.
Yeah,
You want me to get into the next two, or you want to talk about that one?
Well, yeah, let's talk about that one a little bit. Because, you know, if you go onto some of these philosophy forums or blogs online, and here at the Catholic Cave, we tend to do a lot of that. We're a little bit strange here in the cave. But if you go online, you'll see a lot of times you'll confront an atheist that'll talk about the great flying spaghetti monster. Or they'll come up with some other ridiculous caricature of religion in general, not just Christianity, but religion in general. And that seems to be a specimen to a certain extent of what you're talking about, of that, you know, that closed religious mindset of, you know, just not, you know, if somebody is characterizing Christianity as believing in a flying spaghetti monster, mm-hmm. they're not going to be open-minded at all to a certain extent. Towards the idea of God, of religion, etc. So, and you're saying that's really a manifestation, not so much of outright hostility, but of indifference. Correct?
That's right. Yeah, I'm referring to the failure to think seriously about religion, which is kind of the first step to, once that's overcome and someone starts to honestly seek, we can start talking about giving to God his due. But I'm talking about among these skeptics, sort of that failure to honestly answer questions or ask themselves questions about their own beliefs, and not necessarily even questions about God, but questions about atheism. I mean, I'm talking about atheists who don't really have and haven't really thought deeply about what the reasons are for their unbelief.
Yeah, and atheism is kind of a default position in our society. So nobody's forced to confront those. I mean, honestly, somebody has to be challenged, I think, to confront those atheist positions, because it is kind of the default these days.
Yeah, and, you know, there was a really influential atheist philosopher in the 20th century named Antony Flew, who provided some really compelling arguments in the 20th century about the burden of proof, and he sort of tried to equip atheists with reasons for why they don't need to give an account for being atheist, to shift the burden of proof onto theists. But I think even he came to see the weaknesses in his arguments over time. In fact, he ended up converting near the end of his life and becoming he came to believe in the God of Aristotle, he said. So that's and as we know, if for anyone who's a St. Thomas Aquinas fan, Aristotle was very close. He's very much on the right track towards the God of Christianity, the monotheistic God. So there's this effort to sort of try to shift the burden of proof that we find modern atheists, where they don't want to have to deal with reasons for their unbelief. But ultimately, it comes down to this. If you want to make a claim about reality, if you want to state a proposition about what is true, you know, so for example, if you want to say it is true that there is no God, then you have a burden of proof. Just like we as believers would say it is true that God exists, we therefore have a burden of proof as well. And I think that's where the most fruitful dialogue happens for both atheists and believers, is when we admit that we each have a sort of accountability to use our reason to justify what it is we believe.
Yeah, and that brings me to putting in a plug for my boy, St. Thomas Aquinas. You just mentioned him, that, you know, his five proofs for the existence of God have fallen into disrepute, unfortunately. You know, people kind of neglect those. They say, well, you know, they're not really proofs, which they're not proofs in the modern sense, but they're certainly proofs in a more broad sense. And people haven't studied them. They haven't looked at them. And so I think, you know, from an apologetic standpoint, one of the best things you can do is acquaint yourself with those five proofs for the existence of God. You know, I think a lot of people, they look at the formulation that's there in St. Thomas's Summa and they stop. And unfortunately, that's not deep enough to get a good sense of them. But I think that's a great way to challenge an atheist and say, you know, look, we see that things change. We see change all around us. And you can't have an infinite regress of change. Where does change come from if it doesn't come from God? I think most atheists are going to kind of scratch their head and have to think through that a little bit.
Absolutely. Yeah, what I love about St. Thomas Aquinas is how his arguments start with what we just experience right before us in physical reality. So he starts with facts of common experience that even the most hardened skeptic is going to admit, like that change occurs. And then from there, he moves forward to show the underlying philosophical implications of that. And I would want to point your listeners to Carlo Broussard's new book, Prepare the Way. Carlo is somebody that I would consider to be one of the most, at least among my friends, he's by far one of the most knowledgeable people when it comes to the five ways of St. Thomas Aquinas to the existence of God. And I think that book is a good starting point. And if you're an Aquinas guy, you're probably familiar with Ed Fazer.
I was just going to bring him up. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. So once you've read Carlo and even dabble a little bit into Dr. Peter Crafe's work, I would say read anything by Dr. Peter Crafe, but specifically he's a good person to turn to for an introduction to St. Thomas. But then you can move into guys like Ed Fazer and read his newest book, Five Proofs of the Existence of God, which isn't just directed towards the five ways of St. Thomas Aquinas, but if you can read that book, that will not only introduce you to the argument from motion, which is St. Thomas's first way, but it'll also just prepare you to better do natural theology the scholastic way.
We're talking with Matt Nelson here in the Catholic Cave today. Matt is the author of Just Whatever, How to Help the Spiritually Indifferent Find Beliefs That Really Matter. And Matt, you were explaining that there's sort of two sides to spiritual indifference. There's the kind of the intellectual side, which leads to this sort of closed-mindedness. And we were just talking about ways of really challenging people that have this to think through their beliefs. You know, if you say God doesn't matter, where did you come to that idea? Kind of challenging people to go back through their beliefs, but there's a practical part to this as well that you kind of address in your book.
Yeah. So, and do you mean practical in the sense of how we evangelize?
Well, yeah, practical more in the side of the way we live our lives, that there's this indifference manifests itself on an intellectual standpoint, but there's also kind of a defect of the will going on here, too.
That's right, exactly. And so spiritual indifference involves the entire human person, unfortunately. It's sort of a breakdown of the intellect and the will. And so because it's a breakdown of the will, we find ourselves living life without being properly centered in Jesus Christ. And so for a closed indifferentist, they're gonna reject the existence of the monotheistic God or a good, loving, present, and active God in our lives. And so they're going to live differently. St. Maximilian Kolbe said that spiritual indifference is the greatest problem of our time. In fact, he called it the strongest poison of our time. And that's a really strong statement. But I think
especially coming from him, you know, this is the guy that was ultimately murdered by the Nazis. And then and you ask him the greatest evil, and he says it's spiritual indifference. That's saying something.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think that, you know, when we consider who St. Maximilian was, and the perspective from which he would have been writing, he understood that when we cancel out God from our lives, and when we stop to think seriously about things like free will, about life after death, about the objectivity of the moral law, and about where that moral law comes from, and whether or not justice exists, not just in this life, but in the next, we stop thinking seriously about these big questions, we start to live differently. And in fact, we can start to live in a very dangerous way. And we saw this in many profound and many terrible ways in the 20th century with all the different atheistic tyrannies or relativistic tyrannies that came up. Mussolini in Italy, the fascist leader, I mean, he very explicitly vouched for relativism. So I think relativism is, I think, what grows out of this rejection of an authority outside oneself. And so this is this whole idea of the breakdown of the will. I think this is where the real danger is we have this duty to live according to our conscience, live according to this moral law that we feel pressing down upon us. But when we're not making sense of where that law comes from, and we're not giving ourselves some kind of a concrete understanding of why we ought to live a certain way, if we in any way possess power, we can begin to start to realize or believe that we can realize that desire from, like we mentioned this before, that sort of primitive fallen desire to want to be gods ourselves. And that can lead to all kinds of tyrannies and whether it's something major like a Mussolini or a Mao in communist China or Pol Pot in Vietnam or even Hitler in Nazi Germany, I mean, that's on a major level when we're talking tyrannies. But even in one's life, whether it's in a home, you know, a husband who doesn't believe that there's anyone who's going to hold him accountable to his actions, or let's just say a husband who doesn't believe there's any really good reason to follow a certain moral code. When you're missing that, all sorts of ugly things can start to happen. And so what we want to do as evangelists is we want to start to show people that the conscience, which we all possess, and our sense that there's a best way to live, and that happiness only lies at the end of one path. And there's many other paths we can follow, but there's one key one that we need to walk if we want to be happy. If we can start to show indifferentists that, and that in order to make sense of those sorts of intuitions that we have, we need to posit the existence, or at least the potential existence, of a God who knows us and loves us, then we can start to move in the direction of Christianity. And that's where we can kind of jump into then open indifference, which moves from the extreme closed-mindedness towards religious questions and towards God and religion that we saw in closed indifference. But then in open indifference, we see this extreme open-mindedness, where now people are so open-minded towards Jesus and every other major spiritual teacher and thinker and guru that's ever existed, that they see all religions to be on the same footing, to be equally true and good.
Yeah, I run into a lot of people that they claim to be Buddhists or they claim to be Stoics. Those tend to be the two most common ones. Hey, I'm Buddhist or I'm kind of Stoic. And ultimately what that means is I believe that, you know, there's multiple paths to truth. There's multiple sources of truth. And nobody really has a solid claim to be the sole truth. And that's kind of what makes it a little bit dicey, because I think you're right. What they're ultimately saying is, I don't recognize an authority. I don't recognize any sort of moral authority whatsoever. And so to claim one over another would be committing myself to some sort of authority. And I want to keep open the idea that I'm my own authority.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, the authority thing is it's multi-tiered, if you want to understand it, because I don't want to make it sound like, the only reason why it's important to acknowledge the existence of God and a loving personal God who's active in our lives is so that we're kind of scared into doing the right thing. That's not how God works. I think a healthy fear of God is a virtue. Well, I mean, that's biblical, but at the same time, the reason why it's important to understand that there's a God who knows us and loves us and who's responsible for creating and sustaining us, without which we would have no existence at all. If we can come to see a God like that, we can also have a more positive sense that there then must be a best way to live. There must be a key there in our origin in God that can indicate how we can best be happy and how we can achieve that fulfillment of all our desires. And eventually we come to see that fulfillment that we're looking for is in that person. In fact, three persons in the Divine Trinity. But that takes some steps to get there. But I want to go back to something you pointed out about, you know, these people who have been often influenced by Eastern like Oriental philosophies or Eastern religions, where they tend to have this pluralistic view of religions in the world, and they, you know, ultimately adopt an open indifferentist sort of view, where they say, well, all religions are equally good, and they might even go so far as to say all religions are equally true. But then their justification for that is they say, well, because no one could really know whether or not they have the full truth, or no one could really make an exclusive claim and remain humble about which religion is the best religion. But if we step back from that sort of a position, what I would want to ask that person is, well, what makes you so sure that you have the one true overarching religious view on things? Because that in itself is actually the very thing that they're condemning.
Right. Yeah. They want to present themselves as the expert to a certain extent in this idea that there are no experts. And so there's kind of a contradiction at the bottom of it. Now we're kind of coming close to the end of our time here. So I want to move a little bit more to a practical question for those of us who are already theists, those of us who are already Christians. We slip into this sin of indifference pretty easily. I mean, this is a pretty common, I would imagine if you ask most priests, some variety of spiritual indifference is probably the leading sin that they hear in the confessional. So when we recognize this in ourselves, what are some of the steps that we should take to kind of draw ourselves out of this and pull ourselves out of sort of an indifferentist position?
Yeah, right. Okay, well, yeah, and I want to be clear. I mean, I wrote this book as somebody who identified a problem and thought something should be written about it. And seeing as I've walked the path of the indifferentist and as a Catholic who's trying his best to live out his life in the way he would believe God would want him to, I still have my moments. And I'm certainly far from a saint or somebody who's living all of these things that I would recommend to perfection. But I would always start with, you know, I would start with the basics of the Christian spiritual life, and that would be prayer and fasting. I mean, I think that we need to continually fortify ourselves spiritually with the sacraments, going to regular confession. You know, the saints often recommend go monthly, if not more frequently. But aim for monthly confession. Remain in the state of grace. Make sure you're attending Mass on Sundays for sure, but, you know, if you can get to a weekday Mass here and there, do that as well. Just try to have an active, living spiritual life. Get yourself a spiritual director if that's a potentiality for you. You know, and then the whole fasting part, that could be more strict fasts. It's usually something you want to run by a spiritual director first. But even little things like, let's say you're eating some fries and you really want salt on your fries, or maybe you decide to pass on the salt that one time. Little ways of just trying to grow in your love for God and fellow man, and ways to really just sanctify yourself and have the Holy Spirit work through you. That's where I would start. But I would also offer some practical recommendations, because you want to build, you know, as human beings, we're spiritual, which means we possess, through that spirit that we have, an intellect and a will, our ability to know and to love, or to know and to choose. So we want to be able to develop those faculties within us as well, since those faculties above all are what image us in the what make us in the image and likeness of God. And so let's build on the intellect. And since I wrote a book on Catholic apologetics, I think that I want to encourage our listeners to read books like Just Whatever. And there's many other great books out there to be reading, you know, on these sorts of topics. Read books on Catholic apologetics and Catholic evangelization, and become confident in what you know and believe as a Catholic. And be ready then to give an account for the hope that is within you, as it says in 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 21. Always be prepared to make a defense for the hope that is within you. And we can do that by reading good books, and we've mentioned a few in the broadcast today. But I guess this would be more of a recording, not a broadcast. But well, whatever. You all know what I mean.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, in talking about the books, we've talked about Peter Kreft, we've talked about Blaise Pascal, we've talked about a lot of Christian writers, but I would even go so far as to say, you know, broaden beyond just the Christian writers and read some of the pagan theists as well. You know, we mentioned Aristotle, Plato, some of the great philosophers, because I think they start to enkindle natural reason's ability to move towards God. And so when you're dealing with somebody that's intellectually indifferent, being acquainted with their movement and what, you know, you had mentioned it before, Aristotle came right up to the threshold of believing in something that resembles the Christian God. And St. Thomas Aquinas eventually recognized that and was able to use Aristotle to describe Christian theology. But because these thinkers have come so close by their own natural lights to coming to what is really revealed truth, they're a great source for being able to come up with ways to kind of induce other people to think along the same lines.
Yeah, you bet. And, you know, you can even drift outside of, you know, there's the pagan philosophers. Following on your line, if you're going to go outside of Christian writers to read about classical theism and the arguments for the existence of God, Aristotle and Plato are obviously your best starting points. But you know, there were Arabic philosophers who developed the cosmological argument, which was, you know, eventually St. Thomas's bread and butter. And there were others, Plotinus, and there's others, and these are really the arguments that Ed Fazer really spent some time on in his late book, which has gotten a lot of praise, not just from Catholics, but from Protestant Christians as well, that his Five Proofs of the Existence of God, which just came out earlier this year. So that's a good book if you want to kind of see how pagan philosophy meets Christian philosophy. And there's another book for those of you that want to go into something a little more dense. William Lane Craig has a book called The Cosmological Argument, and in that one he begins with Plato, and then he works his way all the way up to St. Thomas Aquinas and beyond to show how that argument from the existence of the universe and the features within it has developed over time. So you can read about these arguments through all the different stages of development. But I'm going to also challenge your listeners in one other way. Speaking of reading non-Christian writers, and this could also be something you do on YouTube. It doesn't necessarily have to be on paper, although I'm a huge advocate of reading books. But we have so much access online now. Maybe you want to start to familiarize yourself with some of the arguments against what we believe. And you have to tread carefully when you do this and make sure you're not watching something that's going to rattle you or put you in a, you know, state of despair or even a state of doubt. So you want to make sure you're really strong in what you believe when you do this. So maybe you want to reflect on whether or not this is a good step or discuss it with your close friends in the faith or spiritual director or whatever. But for me, what has been a key thing is to see what atheists are saying today, to see what the different kinds of skeptics, you know, the Jesus skeptics out there who maybe believe in God, but they don't believe that Jesus was who he claimed to be. Whether it's through watching debates online, and there's a lot of great ones accessible to us today where you get great Christian debaters like William Lane Craig or John Lennox or even Trent Horn. These guys have went out and they've debated atheists, and that often reveals what sort of arguments we can anticipate we'll face when we face closed indifferentists, for example. So become familiar not just with the arguments for what we believe, but dare to become familiar with the arguments against what we believe, so that when you do have those proposed to you, you're ready to take them on.
Yeah, and they may not always be proposed to you. You know, this may be in the back of somebody's mind that you're talking to, but if you've watched a debate between William Lane Craig and Richard Dawkins, for instance, you'll be familiar with what the person you're talking to may be thinking or what the source of their error may be. Well, we've been talking with Matt Nelson here on the Catholic Cave today, the author of Just Whatever, How to Help the Spiritually Indifferent Find Beliefs That Really Matter. And, you know, this is probably a huge spiritual plague in the modern age. So thank you very much, Matt, for your time with us today. It's been great having you in the cave with us today. And we just went through the litany of books to read to get acquainted with proofs for the existence of God. In another week or so, we are going to have your good friend here on, Carlo Brassard. So he's going to be able to walk us through a lot of those proofs here in the cave in a week or so.
Fantastic.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Matt. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for having me, Mark. It's been fun.
We need to take a break, and we'll be back with more of the Catholic Cave on Catholic Radio Indy right after this.
Have you been married and have since divorced? Do you think your marital status prevents you from coming to church? Most Catholics and non-Catholics unfortunately have a lot of misconceptions about marriage, divorce, and remarriage. Pope Francis has recently encouraged all people with questions about marriage to make an appointment and talk with their parish priest. As Catholic priests, we look forward to the opportunity to help you on your journey through life. Please make an appointment to speak with the priest today. We are and will always be here for you.
Besides going to Mass each Sunday, we're all encouraged to spend a little time with our Lord each week, to shut out distractions, to present our prayers to God, and then just listen. In today's hectic world, that sounds impossible, doesn't it? Well, chances are, there's an Adoration Chapel in a Catholic church not far from where you live, a place where you can spend an hour or just a few minutes in the real presence of our Lord Jesus Christ in the Blessed Sacrament, in a quiet, peaceful setting where you can really talk to Jesus. And more importantly, He can talk to you. Many chapels are open 24 hours a day. Here are some of the places where you'll find Adoration Chapels: at St. Mary's Parish, St. Patrick's Parish, St. Therese the Little Flower, and St. Thomas More Parish. Why not stop by soon? Jesus is there, and He is waiting to talk to you.
All too often, we pray too small. Lord, help me just to hang on today. Help me not crumble under the pressures of life. Is that all you think God is capable of? Friends, we don't have a God of just getting by. We have a God who promises life to the full. We don't have a God who sometimes helps His people out. We have a God who splits seas, conquers death, moves hearts, and makes heroes. What action in salvation history makes you think your God is small or incapable? Don't just ask God to help your marriage. Ask Him to help you sweep your wife off her feet again. Don't ask Him to help you stay strong under the pressures of life. Ask Him to make you a blazing light shining to everybody you meet. Don't just ask Him for a drop of water. Ask for rivers of living water to flow from within you to a thirsty world. Live meekly, but pray big. Our God is mighty, and we are His children. This is Chris Stefanik from RealLifeCatholic.com.
Welcome back once again to the Catholic Cave. I'm Mark Tuttle, and here in the cave we are Timless today. So we just got done talking with Matt Nelson, the author of Just Whatever, How to Help the Spiritually Indifferent Find Beliefs That Really Matter. And you know, the thing with that conversation, Kent, that we kept going back to the book of Genesis, you know, it kept coming back to that initial crisis of humanity in the fall. And I think, you know, spiritual indifference comes from that same crisis to a certain extent, that crisis of authority, where we want to follow that temptation to make ourselves like God.
You know, I think a big part of it comes down to simply a lack of trust. Do we trust God? And, you know, that when you really get down to it, I mean, that was the first, there was the original sin. Adam and Eve didn't trust God in you know, believing that what's best for them was not to eat the fruit. And so, you know, there was that lack of trust, and we still see that today. People want to put their trust in themselves. We've got that American rugged individualism
exactly.
thing going on.
Yeah. I think the rugged individualism leads very quickly to spiritual indifference because, you know, first off, you're distracted. So when you're that rugged individualist, you have all the bright, shiny lights and all the dangly things out there that you want to pursue that distract you from pursuing God. But I also think we get kind of a warped view of happiness because of that. You know, happiness becomes something self-made. It becomes something that I can create for myself rather than something that's discovered through some sort of rich spiritual life or through a life in the sacraments or through a life in the church.
Well, I think one of the things that we're looking at today is the fact that it's not just something that I can do or something that I can manufacture. If you look at, you know, media these days, they're always telling you it's something you can buy. If you get this car, you'll be satisfied. If you get this, you know, this improvement, get this job, make this much money, those kinds of things, that will satisfy you. And there's always a product out there that somebody's trying to sell you that will fill that gap, and nothing's going to do it.
No, because that gap is ultimately, you know, like we said, that God-sized hole in the heart that you know, Pascal talked about, that others talked about, that leads to this spiritual indifference. And so, you know, the real remedy is, yeah, finding that time to spend to fill yourself back up with the true image of God, you know, the true image and likeness that we're made in. So we find our own selves when we spend the time to try to fill ourselves up with God.
Yeah, we find that, you know, there's plenty of resources out there that we can tap into, the books, the writings, the traditions of the church. But one of the truest sources that's going to help us fill that gap are the sacraments. When we come back to those, that is the truth that the church still holds and that is presented to us. And that is all the time we have for the Catholic Cave for today. For Mr. Mark Tuttle, and for Tim O'Donnell, who is still obviously out chasing mastodons, I'm Kent Blanford. That's all the time. We'll be back with you next week. Thanks for listening. God bless. The Catholic Cave is a production of Catholic Radio Indy. Replays of this program are available in podcast form at catholicradioindy.org. Comments about this program can be addressed to kent@catholicradioindy.org or by calling 317-870-8400. Did you miss something in this show or just want to hear it again? Podcasts of this and all our other great local programs are available 24/7 at catholicradioindy.org.